is the excuse for all of them? I don't know.
Life is mine. God gave this life to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening, happy Shabbat. We're coming to you from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This is Asher, and I are down here as the thunderstorms begin to roll in. We've got JB in the heart of Texas. How are you, JB?
Doing good.
Good. And, of course, Kirk in the land of fruit and nuts. How's things in NorCal?
That's pretty good. Having a nice winter. Having a nice summer, rather. It's pretty nice so far.
The fires have stopped, and so have the rains, huh?
Yes, sir. Everything's good.
Everything's
good now.
Good. We were reviewing Yeshaya 40 is where we had, I think we'd gotten through statements 1 and 2 of Yeshaya 40 in the conclusion of our last program. And the reason that we turned to Yeshaya 40 is that we were covering Mizmors 1 through 5. And in Mizmor 5, Psalm 5, Dod makes a statement that is eerily similar to one of the most famous lines cited in the Christian New Testament. It's on Jaokanan's lips and then incorporated, that's Jaokanan the immerser, and then incorporated into Jaokanan the disciple's text. Of course, we don't know whether or not either man, one said it and one wrote it or not, because the Christian New Testament is such a mess historically in the way it's been preserved. But the words that Dod wrote in the fifth Mizmor were cited by both of them, but not from the fifth Mizmor, but instead their interpretation in Yeshaya 40. And I remember reading these the fifth Mizmor and saying, I've seen those words used together someplace else. And of course, the most famous application of them was what happened in the Jordan River when Jaokanan the immerser was saying, prepare a way for, and of course all Christian translations say the Lord, established a raised highway in the desert and prepare for the arrival of the Lord. Read that there, recognized it was a citation of Yeshaya 40, and so we turned to it. And the reason we turned to it, beyond the fact that this is now the second time that we've come across a place where Yahweh, through one of his prophets, is quoting Dod. Because Dod wrote his Mizmor 300 years before Yeshaya 40 was written. And I thought that was fascinating. And second, it pertains to a future event. It, when you read in context, Yeshaya 40, as we shall soon see, pertains to Yahweh's return not Yosha's arrival. And therefore, what we'll also find is that it pertains to the second coming of Dodd. So let's jump back in where we were, just to pick things up in context. 41 of Yeshayah says, choose to change your thinking and relent, and you will be comforted and consoled, my people. Promise is your God. And as we spoke a week ago, that is the issue. Underline issue 1,000 times if you'd like. Put it in all caps. I hate to write in all caps. But in this case, it's correct. If we want to be comforted and consoled by God, then we need to change our thinking. The overwhelming preponderance of people, and it's more than 999,999 out of every 1 million, their opinions about God are wrong. And so God is saying, of your own free will, if you want to find relief from your troubles, you need to change your thinking. The cover right now of Time magazine happens to be A Guide to Happiness. And the reason they've published it is because the vast preponderance of people are miserable. You know, the number one cause of death in many communities across the country now is opiates. People are taking them because they can't cope with life. Drug abuse has never been so high. Alcohol abuse has never been so high. You know, so many people are depressed. There's 650,000 veterans that are now claiming to suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome. The number of people on mind-altering drugs, on anti-depression drugs, rivals those on painkillers. You know, we live in a society. In fact, down here in South Florida, one of the things that I noticed is that it's really hard to find somebody who isn't drunk most of the time. Just liquored up constantly. You know, they start drinking early in the day and they just can't stop. You know, I'm looking out my window here in my home, and Fort Lauderdale looks over the Intracoastal, and it's a kind of a famous place here in Fort Lauderdale. It's called the Sandbar. It's where on average weekend you'll have 100 boats, each with about 8 to 10 people in them, and they, you know, drink themselves into oblivion and play their rap music very loud. But the big thing now is to have enormous flags. The little boat that just went by my window had a flag that was bigger than the boat. The flag must have been, you know, 10 feet by 15 feet. You know, it's patriotic now to be
the
flag, drunk.
The more patriotic, right?
That's yeah, the right. Drunker you are, the more patriotic you are. Well, you need to change your thinking if you want to know God. Speak from the heart, exercising good judgment unto Jerusalem, and announce summoning her by reciting to her that indeed her battles are finished and completed. The consequence of her missing the way is pardon through restitution, causing her to be accepted, regaining favor, because she has obtained from the hand of Yahweh a double portion for all of her errant and mistaken ways. This statement is particularly important because it creates context, and there is no way to interpret anything correctly if you remove it from its context. The citation that Yehochanan the Immerser incorrectly applied to Yosha, he was able to do so because he removed it from context. This and the statements that come after it clearly indicate that it could not have applied to that time because it had not occurred, and it still has not occurred. No one is speaking to the heart or from the heart, exercising good judgment unto Jerusalem.
No.
Only people that are speaking to Jerusalem are those who covet it for themselves. They're not trying to say, pay attention to the promises that Yahweh made to Israel through his prophets, through Abraham, through Yitzhak, through Jacob, through Dodd, and through everyone else since that time, and relent. No, no one is saying that. I'm saying it. It's occupied territory. The Jews have to get out. Speak from the heart, exercising good judgment. The one thing that is completely lacking in every discussion regarding Jerusalem, and announce, summoning her, and by reciting to her, Kara, that her battles are finished and completed. Okay. Fellas, what are the chances that this could have applied to Yosha when the next line is the one that Yohanan the Immerser cited when it says that her battles are finished and completed? Was that the last
zero
battle? That
no chance.
What happened in 70 CE?
Jerusalem.
Rome, a battle and a war.
Yeah. In fact, Rome was so brutal in 70, they destroyed the temple, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
The Ark de Titus shows Jews in chains being hauled back, menorah raised above their heads as they became the slaves that built the Colosseum. And the money looted from the temple was used to fund the most decadent, the most despicable arena ever built to human indulgences and death, the Roman Colosseum. So I certainly her battles were not over. What then happened in 133?
They wiped out the rest of them and salted the earth, and the diaspora was complete.
Yes, the worst battle probably ever perpetrated on any place by Rome. And then last time I checked, they fought more battles throughout the Crusades, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
And they fought battles all the way through to the point of trying to restore Israel. And, in fact, it wasn't even Israel. It was called Palestine by the intellectual and the political and the religious from the time that Rome destroyed the province of Yehuda until the British were finally kicked out in 1948. So there was no Yisrael. So her battles could not have been finished because the country didn't even exist. And in 1948, they fought the War of Their Independence, so their battles were hardly over. And then, shortly thereafter, in 1967, they fought the Six Days War. And then, in 1974, was the Yom Kippurim War. And every day, they fight for their survival against Islamic terrorists. So, no, I don't think so. And even in our immediate future, there's two more battles to be fought in and around Jerusalem, Magog War and Armageddon. So you don't have to be the sharpest implement in the drawer to figure out that this did not pertain to something that has already transpired, for example, in 33 CE with Yosha.
Yeah, it just couldn't be.
And it talks about the consequence of her missing the way has been repaid. Well, did somebody miss the Holocaust?
I've been pushed out everywhere. Russia, Ukraine, Spain.
Yeah, Poland, Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a scholar now that has written a book besmirching the academic, politically correct myth that Spain was this place where Muslims and Roman Catholics and Jews all lived together in blissful harmony.
Now, whatever.
The opposite is true, but it's become so politically correct to convey the lie that the lie is shrill, and it's published by PhD candidates at the loftiest institutions. But, of course, as you mentioned, Spain. Spain got to be so bad that even the Rambam, who was so accommodating of Muslims that he became the vizier for Saladin. And yeah, he moved from Spain because of the horrible treatment of Jews during the Islamic period to Morocco, which of course was Islamic, and then moved to Cairo, which was of course Islamic, but even they were better than Spain. It's amazing how people will distort history when it doesn't suit their agenda. So this is the line, and so we now know that this line pertains to a time that has not yet occurred. A voice, Cole, the sound, calls out, inviting and summoning. Oh boy, that's the word of words, Kara, reads and recites, calling out and welcoming to the Mikre. In the wilderness, Midbar, in the desolate and lifeless place without the word. Turn around and choose to change direction so that you are prepared for, and this would be pana, walk away from what you have been electing to reject it, so that you are ready to face the way, the derek, the path of Yahweh. Of your own free will, choose to become straightforward and right, making correct and on the level, Yetzar. Choose to be direct, reliable and steadfast, standing upright without wandering to and fro. A raised highway, an elevated ramp, a walkway and gateway, makila, by lifting up the upright conduct of one's life to show the way up, especially pertaining to respecting the well-maintained road which ascends, the gate to walk through, and the raised structure on which to proceed, even a staircase. Through the dark and lifeless wilderness, Wabaha Arabha, through the barren and lifeless wasteland of unenlightened and unassociated Arabs, through the nocturnal swarms of noxious pests, and within the gloomy fabric that results from commingling, even through Arabia, where the Torah was revealed, to approach our God. Well, that's a whole lot more information than you found on Yao Khan and the Immerser's lips as translated into Greek and presented by Yao Khan and the disciple. That's for sure. Either the translations are not accurate, or the citation was not accurate, or we have some judicial editing along the way.
That's one more example of why we shouldn't trust the Greek text.
It is. Yep, a voice calls out, inviting and summoning. Turn around. Choose to change direction such that you are prepared for the way of Yahweh. Choose of your own free will to become straightforward and right, making correct and on the level. A raised highway, an elevated ramp, a walkway through the dark and lifeless wilderness to approach our God. Oh,
you know
God.
What's the one? You know what's
go
one
ahead. But
is, well, because of, you mentioned when we were about to go on the show and start the show that how wonderful it is to be in this time, because I can look at this and look up every word in there and know exactly what y'all are saying, and I couldn't come close in the Greek.
No, that's true.
Okay, regardless, even if it's in context, I'd probably still be suffering trying to get out of it what is easily done here. Anyone hearing her voice right now could look all these up on even a simple program or some lexicons and get within 99% of the way there.
Yeah. And did Yao Khan and the Immerser speak Greek?
Not at all. But I
might know.
Spoke Hebrew. And how about Yao Khan and the disciple?
hardly.
Heber.
Yeah, I think Yohanan the disciple, as a fisherman, clearly spoke Hebrew during the time that he lived in Israel, and that he was the 3 years he spent with Yosha, and Yosha only spoke Hebrew. But when he moved to Ephesus, it's likely that that was, probably not likely, it was absolutely post-fulfillment of Shavuah. And the purpose of Shavuah was to enable those who had already observed Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkurim to speak in languages they didn't or already know. So it's very possible that, in fact, likely that Yohanan would have learned to have spoken Greek. But at the time that this occurred, he didn't, Yosha didn't, and Yohanan the Immerser didn't. So if we want to know what they said, you got to read the Hebrew.
Do you think he would have written in Greek, or would he have written in Hebrew and had one of his associates translate or at least go over it with him?
We don't know. This is what we do know. By Yohanan the disciple writing this in his book, and indicating, as it does in Yohanan, that it applies to Yosha, we know for certain, as a result of that, that he was not inspired, because he's wrong. It doesn't apply to Yosha. He was not inspired, and that we have a number of choices here. That he wrote it in Hebrew but didn't include this. Because no matter what language he wrote it in, if he included this, he was wrong. Yeah, it was wrong. And if it was written in Greek, it's double wrong, because it's not an accurate citation of Yeshaya 43. And the other option is that he didn't write it, and Yohanan the Immerser didn't say it, and that the whole thing is just made up by a church during the first couple of hundred years that was desperate for affirmation that their Jesus Christ was God. But that's a tough thing to say, to speak of Yohanan who spent 3 years with Yosha. If he wrote this, he was not inspired, because it does not apply to Yosha. That's not my opinion. We just read what preceded it. We're going to read what follows it. What preceded it has not taken place even yet.
No.
And it's clear. I mean, it's not like it's subject to interpretation. I'm sorry. The Holocaust happened, and Jerusalem's battles have been many, and they will continue. Two more to be fought. And, oh, by the way, it doesn't say, prepare the way of the Lord. It says, turn around and choose to change direction so that you are prepared for the way of
Yahweh.
Yeah. Not Jesus. Not Yosha. Not the Lord. Yahweh. And what we're about to read says that it's the glorious presence of Yahweh that's going to become conspicuous. So that's a profound statement. Two extraordinarily profound statements here. If Yohanan wrote this, he was not inspired, because it's wrong. If Yohanan didn't write this, then we have yet another nail in the coffin of the Christian text, because it's not reliable.
All right.
It's errant beyond comprehension.
Sounds like a Marcion deal to me.
Yeah. And then what you've got, well, Marcion didn't deal with Yohanan. Marcion only included Luke, Paul's attaché, and Paul's letters. And so Marcion never even touched it. So it's either that Yohanan is not inspired, the text has been so changed as it bears no resemblance to what he actually wrote, is realization one or two. And then the next is that this Christian myth that everything that appears that applies to Yahweh or to Dode is misappropriated to Yosha is pathetic. This is pathetic. It completely destroys one of the most important prophecies of Christianity because it doesn't apply to their Jesus Christ, and yet they claim it. It also tells us that those who are religious have lost the ability to think, because the conclusion that we are announcing here was not difficult to form. It is extraordinarily
obvious.
All it takes
is looking at it in context.
Correct.
You look at it in context, there's no denying the conclusion. There's only one conclusion that can be drawn.
Yes. Only one. And even if I have to say that make the statement that I'm gonna wallow in it some, because this is really important to me. Even if you were to take the statement out of context and translate it correctly with Yahweh's name and the words correct, for example, turn around and choose to change direction so that you're prepared, pana, for the way of, and then you included Yahweh's name instead of replacing it with the Lord, and then dealt with the verb yatsar correctly, of your own free will, choose to become straightforward and right, making correct and on the level a raised highway through the dark and lifeless wilderness, a rabha, that wasteland of unenlightened and unassociated Arabs, to approach our God. It's not our God approaching us, which is the implication. Here, I'm making the announcement. Our God is approaching us right now. No. It's so that we can approach our God. If you just translated it accurately, it doesn't apply. And, of course, then if you read it with what came before it, it doesn't apply. And what do we read comes after it? It doesn't apply. There's no gray area here. It just flat out does not apply to Yosha, therefore does not apply to Jesus Christ, therefore was misappropriated by Christianity, by Yahochanan if he wrote it, by John the Baptist, Yahochanan the Immerser, if he spoke it.
Well, he couldn't have said it. The Mercer could not have said it in front of Yahusha. Yahusha would have corrected him.
Correct.
And we would stand there and let him say that.
Yes. He says, hey, pal.
And you're totally way off.
You know, I inspired the prophet Yahusha,
right.
And this is what it actually says. You're right. I never even thought about that. But Yahusha would have said, no. Let me quote it for you. This is what it says. And by the way, he was quoting Dode. Yeah, I was quoting Dode, but you'll also find it in the fifth Mizmor.
Yeah.
He was prone to quote Dode.
Just one more reason why the Greek text just isn't worth the time and effort to get the handful of nuggets of wisdom you can get from it just aren't worth the effort.
They aren't. It's just not there. It's just, it's so unreliable. So much of it is inaccurate. It's clearly not inspired. Now, I do think there's some usable text. So long as you're judicious, so long as you translate it out of Greek back into Hebrew, there's some usable text. And the account of the disciple Matanya, he is the only eyewitness other than Dode, who is a prophetic eyewitness to these events. And so I do think that his attempt to quote Yosha and to describe what he witnessed is a reasonable eyewitness account. I would not go so far as to say it's inspired, but it's a very useful eyewitness account. So I think it has value. There are some things in Yaokanan, but it's so heavily edited by Christians that it's just hugely unreliable. So I would then jump all the way ahead and say, well, the next thing that has value would be the revelation to Yaokanan. And even then, you know, the overwhelming preponderance of it is found in Zechariah.
Daniel.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's also in Yirmiyah. You know, the Babylon has fallen. That's in Yirmiyah. But most of it is in Zechariah. Zechariah is probably the most prevalent. It's a lot of it's in Malachi. Even the two witnesses, I translated that passage about a week ago and sent it off, and that's Malachi, I believe. And so, you know, everything that is revealed there has already been revealed someplace else where it's more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk, I know that you spent a lot of time translating these passages, and I know you began with 1 and ended up having the most fun with 9 and 10, but what did you find here in 3 that might help those who are listening understand it better?
Well, I tell you, let me flip back over here. What I did on this one is I just broke down every word and then I went back to read yours. I didn't do a lot of the grammar, but there is some grammar in there that helps too. It's just confirming that it's future events during Jacob's troubles. That rang out pretty clear. And then when you see Tara, as you mentioned a little earlier, we're talking about called out. So, and I was comparing those against the English translations, which haven't seemed to change everything at their whatever makes sense to them. I also looked at the on these. I'm starting to look almost as often as I can at all the grammar and to see whether it's like in the panay, which is a verb. It's in the tael imperative. So I know right away, which I would have known a few years back, that it's an intensive active thing. So I can even get the nuances of what's being said and how strongly it's being said or how ordinarily it's being said. So most of that was, and then I went back to also some of the letters, and this was one that was kind of fun. And for me, you could just translate it as he's telling to turn, the verb to consider or turn around. But it's interesting that in the letters on the pictograph, you have words, and the next one is a nun, which is a continuous increase in future generations. Two, we thought was going in that direction, to a hay, which is an upright, observant, engaged person. So what it does for me and the pleasure I get out of it may not be that I'm finding anything profound as much as I'm finding Christ. This is every way I can look at this from every different angle reinforces what you're talking about.
Yeah, Panay whether it's Panay or Pana, there one is considered a noun, and the other one, and it's a prepositional noun, and the other is a verb. They pronounce it Pana as a verb. Same three letters, though. But it's words, pay the mouth. Words create new life for those who stand up, reach up, look up to God, and who are observant.
Come upright, yeah.
Yeah.
It just goes on like that, on and on and on and on, which is, I'm kind of past the point that I'm surprised at it. I'm just delighted by it more. Each time I do it, I go, you know, you have to be... You just have to walk away, and I don't care about you, Yahweh, because you can't study this and not appreciate how the clarity with which he talks to us, even though we're fumbling around in English. I mean, it's just that's what I get out of it, probably, no matter what I do. And some others are really kind of exciting.
Yes. Well, God's people are being asked to listen to Yahweh's voice. He is summoning them, inviting them to read and recite his testimony. Yahweh is calling his people out of the mire and muck of man, such that Yisrael turns around, changing direction, her people preparing themselves to accept Yahweh's way. It is the only acceptable path home. Therefore, to bring an end to the nation's battles, to conclude the people's suffering, to be reconciled with God, Yisrael and Yahudah must first choose to change direction such that they are prepared for Yahweh. But that's not easy, since both Christians and Jews have deliberately replaced Yahweh's name with the Lord, making it more likely than not that most would misconstrue and misappropriate the obvious. This isn't the way of the Lord, nor of Jesus Christ, but instead the way of Yahweh. Without directly violating the third statement that Yahweh etched on the first of the two tablets, the one that warned us never to negate or to deceive in conjunction with his name. This prophecy could never have been misunderstood, nor errantly interpreted, and would have forestalled the misguided Jewish and Christian claims. Yahusha opened the doorway to life. He did not speak of, he did not construct, nor did he ask his disciples to build a highway to heaven. It was Dode who revealed how to prepare ourselves such that we are able to walk towards God, even through the darkest and most lifeless wilderness. The coal voice speaking through the prophet Yeshaya is Yahweh's. It's not Yahweh Conan's. And it's Yahweh who is, in his Torah, has Kara invited us to be called out and meet with him, so that he can welcome those of us who read, recite, and proclaim his words during his Mikre into his family and home. And we all know that the Bible is the most translated and broadly published book in human history. And yet the translations are so erroneous, and much of the material is so vile. The entire world, including Israel, has been Baha Midbar, in a lifeless wilderness without the word for a very, very long time. Far too few have asked the appropriate questions regarding my Dabar. My, the who, what, where, when, how of the word. Fortunately, this is beginning to change, and we are part of this predicted and fortuitous transformation. As we speak to better understand this prophecy, as we seek to do so, we find that there are many interrelated ways to render a most interesting word, Mikalah. We don't find it very often, but we can recognize that it is derived from halal, which means to lift up and respect the ability, in this case of Yah's way, to raise us out of the Arabah, those who are unassociated, those living in the darkness where life is squandered. A Makalah is a raised highway, an elevated ramp. It's a walkway and gateway, even a staircase. Oh, that's interesting, because the path that Yahweh provided for us to walk, beginning with the doorway labeled Pesach, through the threshold of unyeasted bread, to the point of becoming firstborn children, and then seven sevens later to Shabuah, where those same children are enriched and empowered and enlightened. That pathway that goes on through Teruah, where those enriched by Yeshua, proclaim the good news of Yahweh's message while issuing a warning to the religious and political that they've got it all wrong. And that hopefully this all leads to what this very prophecy is addressing, the reconciliation of Yahweh with his chosen people, so that we all can camp out together in Israel in the promised land. That path isn't just straightforward and unwavering and narrow and correct and restrictive, and few find it, but that path is raised. It walks right through the dimensions from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 into the 7th dimension. It takes us from being anchored here on earth to being liberated in heaven. The path we walk through the Mikra is a raised highway to our God. It indeed is a Mikra. Beyond all this, Mikra speaks of lifting up the upright conduct of one's life to show the way up, revealing the gate to walk through, to be lifted out of and above the fray of those seeking La Elohi Anahu, to approach our God. That's the purpose of the Mikra, isn't it?
Yes.
To take us from the corrupted world of man to the perfect world of God. La Elohe Anahu, to approach our God. Since Yahweh began this using Midbar, the primary Hebrew word for wilderness, there must be a reason that he concluded by saying that the Mikra, the raised path, would go Baha Arabha, through the barren and desolate wasteland of unenlightened and unassociated Arabs, through the nocturnal swarms of noxious pests, and within the gloomy fabric of commingling. And so while there are likely more, I suspect there are at least three reasons for this. The first enlightening, the second prophetic, and the third pragmatic. None of which is even mentioned in an English translation, but deprived of an accurate rendering of Yahweh's testimony, the world is a dark place, one in need of the kind of light Yahshayah is providing. Prophetically, the overwhelming preponderance of people surrounding Israel are noxious Arabs. And pragmatically, this ascending path must go through Arabia, which is where the Torah was revealed to the children of Israel en route to the Promised Land. If we were reading this chapter from beginning to end, tackling it, as we are attempting really to do here, to find out what things lead to another and how things are connected, way back in Mizmor 5:8, I asked the readers of the chapter, I said, do you notice what I notice? And I actually took a good long while to flesh this out, because it's profoundly important that I know what readers are seeing. Now, this is the 19th book now that I've written, and the likelihood is that most of the people reading the 19th book have read some or all of the preceding 18. And after a while, most of the things that I say, hey, here's an insight, they already know, already recognize. And so I remember reading this, translating the passage in Mizmor 5:8 and saying, Yatzar, Derek, Pana. Those words are used in a place that I've seen them multiple times before. And so I asked over and over again, Do you see what I'm seeing here? Are you making the same connection? Because if you are, there's no reason for me to go into such detail about it. If you aren't, then it's probably important that I point it out, and that we continue to make connections so that we all grow together. Well, the words that comprise Mizmor 5:8 are found in Yeshaya 43. The chronology is clear. Mizmor 5:8 was written 300 years before Yeshaya 43. Which means that Yahweh paraphrased through the prophet Yeshaya something that he inspired Dodd to write three centuries previously. Now, I was curious as to whether or not I was onto something interesting, so I read Yahweh Kanan's citation as well as the source from which the declaration was taken. And when I considered the context of the original prophecy, it became immediately obvious that Yeshaya was predicting something extraordinary. Yahweh's return and the second coming of Dodd. Its fulfillment transpires when Yahweh is obliterating the Gentile nations while reconciling his relationship with Israel. This realization is exceedingly important, not only for Israel, but also for Christians. The determination of the timing and purpose of this invitation from God to change our way of thinking so that we're right and we're prepared for the arrival of Yahweh is derived from the context the prophet provided. Here then is Yeshaya 44. Every depressed place shall be raised. Each elevated place of illicit worship shall be brought down. And it shall come to be that the insidiously deceitful and deceptive nature of that which is not on the level shall be clear-cut and flattened out. The uneven terrain of obstructionist conspiracies which make the way impassable shall be burst open. Hasn't happened. It has to happen for God to return to this earth, because he can't be surrounded by all the muck of religion and politics and militarism and conspiracy. And it's going to happen because the earth is going to be transformed to conditions we saw in the Garden of Eden. But you have a choice here. You know, you can believe that God's going to do bulldozing and you know, no more mountains, no more valleys. We're just going to make the earth totally flat and uninteresting. Or you've got to look at what the words actually say and say, what's happening here? Every depressed place shall be raised. And each elevated place of illicit worship shall be brought down. God has promised to do this over and over again through his prophets. And it shall come to be that the insidiously deceitful and deceptive nature of that which is not on the level. That's the whole idea of taking things that are depressing or elevated places of worship and bringing them all down and ridding the world of them is because, and it's stated right here, this is how you affirm that we're not talking about raising valleys and slicing down mountains. It's because raising valleys and slicing down mountains would have nothing to do with the insidiously deceitful and destructive nature of that which is not on the level. So if you're going to render them as valleys raised and mountains chopped down, how in the world are you going to deal with a cob? Ignore it? Change it? You're going to render the whole thing ridiculous? Or are you going to try to render it in a way that the words all make sense?
Well, we'll render it ridiculous because it fits our religious agenda.
That's true. and the uneven terrain of obstructionist conspiracies, which make the way impassable, shall be burst open. Yeah, that's the worst of it, I think, is all the conspiracies over time that have sought to delegitimize Israel and Yehuda and Yahdim Jews. It makes the witness that Yahudim, the prophets of old, delivered, it negates its value, negates the idea that Yahusha was the living embodiment and fulfillment of Pesach and the Passover lamb. It negates the legitimacy of the seven Moed Mikre and the fact that they're still valid. It negates the legitimacy of the Shabbat. It gives way to the perception that God did away with all that stuff so that he could have a Gentile church. It's the conspiracies against Jews that have made Yah's way impassable. And so for Yah's way to be reestablished, he needs to burst it all open, rip it apart. That's what it says is going to happen here. There are so many places where God speaks against conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're one of those still clinging to them, you know, that's just it's a crying shame. Just go away. You know, you're better off, of course, renouncing them and coming to embrace the truth. That's the best choice. Renounce them. Learn from the mistakes you've made in the past. Stop advocating for them. Stop believing them. Stop wallowing in them. And come clean. But if you can't do that, at least shut up. Stop spending so much time trying to reinforce the stupidity of things like chemtrails and the inside job of 9/11 and the vaccine myths and fluoride myths and
flat earth.
And the worst of all, that the Jews are the problem and that there's this conspiracy amongst Jews to obliterate Gentiles. Stop it. Stupid.
Can I jump in on this one?
Yeah.
In 44, it's obviously medical race. Without trying to be trite, I mean, it was very obvious to begin with, but when you go through the looking up each one of the words and all, I had a little trouble finding conspiracies, but I did find it because they had them. They almost had those the way they write the lexicons and these things. I also found in here, which was extremely interesting to me, it was instead of mountains, it was defined, and Yeshayahu 65 is defined this way, is when he says the same word for mountains is places of illicit worship.
Yeah.
And Horah, you have
Gibeah.
You know,
if you wanted to say, if he just wanted to say mountains, he'd have said Har.
Yeah, why not?
Har is the Hebrew word for mountain. He didn't. He used Gibeah.
Used hundreds of times.
Yes.
And then you go to the next couple of words, and you've got Gibeah, which is refers especially to illicit places of worship. You've even got Assyria. It's also the same word with a feminine end of it, which is the city of Benjamin, which I always find Benjamin being a negative connotation. Sorry if you're Benjamite, but that's where
I am.
So, and then there's a little trade-off on that with when there's the bia, which is a bowl or a religious cap. So, I mean, after a while, you have to say, well, he ain't talking about mountains, and he's not talking about raising up valleys. He's talking about destroying religion, and it goes on and on. And every word from that point on, even the Bakwa, is to split and burst open a cutting blow that separates and divides. Well, that's true, but the next one is reeks, which says to bind or be tied up, which is the definition of the Latin word religion. And it also is word for conspiracy. So everything
right.
is there, he ain't talking about how do you translate it the way the English.
Right.
I mean, it's a rhetorical question to us now at this point, but it's like.
Yeah, Rick Heck is such an unusual word, and you know that's one of the things that I didn't really come to fully appreciate until maybe just a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
As I was, you know, I was always frustrated a bit that translating Yirmiyah or translating Yashayah was so difficult, and that you know if you're translating the Psalms of Dode, you can get into a role and you can just go because he has his vocabulary. There's a certain vocabulary that you find in the Torah. And so if you're doing the Torah and you're just going statement after statement, you can make some headway because the vocabulary is the same. But it's not the same vocabulary that Dode uses in his songs. And the vocabulary of Yashayah and Yirmiyah are also very different. And so there's two ways to look at it. And the scholars will say, well, that means that, you know, they're written at different periods and different people contributed and the like. Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. A much better way to look at it. And that is that Yah doesn't use people as robots. If he wants to use a robot, he uses a malak. People have free will. Do you think that Yahweh needed Moshe to go with him into Mitzrayim to liberate the children of Israel?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But he wanted to.
Right. He could have done it on his own, but he didn't. He chose to use Moshe. And when he chose to use Moshe, do you think that there was any chance that he wasn't going to let Moshe play a role in all of this?
No. There wouldn't have been a reason to
have
him.
Of having Moshe there,
he's
not
going to
play a role. Right? What in the world is the Badim? The body is Moshe talking to us, right?
Yeah,
what is the purpose of having Dode write all these songs? You think that God's got the capability of being a lyricist and writing a melody?
Of course.
Pretty sure he could do it.
The reason that he chose to work through people is so that they could express themselves. He wants to communicate it to them in such a way that they then can express to us what they have seen, what they have experienced in their own words. That's why the vocabularies are different. And this rekek is that unusual word.
It is.
It speaks of the uneven terrain of obstructionist conspiracies, which make the way impassable. The binding tethers, that's what you mentioned, it has this religious connotation, the binding tethers of enticing collusions, which impede progress. These harmful and rough schemes, even the bumpy ground of intrigue, the snares and the plots which hamper and obstruct the way, treacherously blocking the path. There's a lot you can learn if you take the time to study the words. Now, is it possible that God didn't mean to communicate all of that? Yeah, it is. And so who among us thinks they're smart enough to choose what to take out of that expanded definition that they are for certain that God did not intend to say when he used rekek?
Well, what you can do occasionally is some of these have both a positive and a negative.
Yes, they do.
So you have to know the context or feel you're comfortable enough with the context and you have enough clues that you can say, well, it has to be this or that. So you can narrow it down that way, but I agree with you. The reason I write such long notes to myself is because I'm not always sure. I mean, sure, I'll give you one more example, if I may, without boring you all to death, but Shafel. It's just simply to be made low, to be a base, or to be brought down. Context talking about mountains, that's correct. But it's also to be created, to be cast down. It's set into a lower place. And then the statue position, lowered down into a lower statue, rather, and a lower position. Also low in energy, activity, and idleness. So if Sheol is that way, Yeah. I'm going to put you in
the middle. Yeah, sounds a lot like SEAL, doesn't it?
Zero dimension.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
So, and I don't know
yeah,
what
the only
class,
negative
or
of
what I
bringing everything up is that it makes it harder and harder for people to get the gist of what's being said. And the more that you put those who are really studious can dig in and glean an enormous amount of information. But you're right, it's all there. And you know, most of the time I think that every potential meaning that the context allows should be included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, your style of writing.
Unless the context can eliminate it, there's no reason not to think that that's what Yahweh intended.
Or yeah. at least not put ourselves in the arrogant position that we think we're smart enough to eliminate things that could have been intended, but we just don't like, or we think maybe something is better.
Sure. Yeah. Unless the context can eliminate it, I include it.
Yeah, that's but absolutely
some,
right.
Like you said, the context can eliminate it. Yeah, in context, there's no way it means this. Okay.
Correct.
But if the context allows for it, I'm putting it in my translation.
Yes.
I'm just including everything. I'm a shotgun. I go scatter shot. I'm trying to get it as out there as I can.
Yeah. Well, no matter how one translates or interprets these words, the context of the prophecy of 44 of Yeshayah has not happened yet. That's not occurred. It could not, therefore, pertain to Yosha circa 33 CE. We should expect these miraculous events to transpire on Yah's return in year 6000 Yah, 2033, commensurate with the reestablishment of Dote's kingdom. And of course, I would invite anyone who is listening to compare these insights to those squandered in English Bibles. It's your decision. Is God pushing mountains into valleys such that the earth becomes uninteresting and flat? Or is he preparing for his return by ridding the world of illicit worship and insidious conspiracies, beginning with those which have served to impede the way of his Mikra?
One would be beneficial and one would be pointless.
Yeah, well counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
Why would Yahweh create a world with elevation interests? Because if you don't have elevation, the ecosystems no longer work. You know, you no longer have the updrafts that are necessary to create rain in certain places and the you know, movements of winds and you know, if it's just all flat, yeah, you got a serious problem. Well, I think it may be a stretch, this particular notion I'm going to share with you, but this could refer to the bringing down of the most uplifted form of illicit worship in Earth history, the most insidious and deceptive plot ever conceived, Christianity. Is Yahweh leveling a blow at those who have come to worship Jesus Christ as the fullness of the Godhead? The God who on the implement of the torture stick is the dead God on a stick that is so pervasive? No. Whether or not obliterating the insulting nature of this putrid cult, this rotten outgrowth of Roman culture, is the specific intent of this prediction. One thing is certain. Every obstacle religious, political, conspiratorial, and militaristic men have placed over and around Yahweh's way will be obliterated. Places of worship will be brought down. Depressing places will become uplifting. Everything will be on the straight and level, such that the way is no longer impeded and impassable. We're being invited to do our part, to advance in advance of the job that Yahweh is going to finish. Now, on Yom Kippur, the Day of Reconciliations in 6000 Yah, October 2nd, 2033, at sunset, we'll have a very distinguished guest arriving for dinner. Then, the glorious presence, the manifestation of power, the splendor and status, the kabod, the actual persona and honorable nature of Yahweh shall be revealed, becoming openly known, galah, exposed, disclosed, and recognized. Then the good news will be that every living creature, Kol Bashar, all flesh, will be gladdened. All together at the same time. Yada. This is true and reliable because the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. That ain't no Jesus Christ. That's not what happened in 33 CE. Sorry, folks. Prophecy did not apply to him. Yahochanan was wrong for writing it. Yahochanan was wrong for saying it. Christians are wrong for believing it. There is no second coming of Jesus Christ. There is no Jesus Christ, but no second coming even for Yahusha. It is said so many places, and if it wasn't for the fact that religious men are constantly violating the third statement that he etched in stone and removing his name from his own witness, there wouldn't be so many people that are misled. But guys, this is really profound. This is so black and white. If you wondered who's coming back, is going to be, you know, a brighter version of Yahshua, or is it Yahweh? It's Yahweh.
It's Yahweh.
Now, what that means is that Yahusha cannot be there. What would be the purpose of having a diminished manifestation of oneself if your own self, the glorious presence of Yahweh, is going to become revealed and openly known? Why in the world would he have a diminished manifestation of himself tag along?
It's kind of bizarre, don't you think?
Yahusha served one purpose. Yahusha was the Passover lamb. Once he served that purpose, he had no other use beyond that. He's gone and
he will
never be back.
Physical body was destroyed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the soul
that doesn't exist anymore. It was destroyed. Yep. Consistent with the Torah's instructions on the Passover lamb. It's so ludicrous that Yahweh and his glorious presence is going to become revealed and become openly known to think that's going to be Yahusha? Diminished manifestation in a physical form? No. Now, I don't know how much of Yahweh is going to be able to enter this world, because we really don't know how much of this world is being transformed. We don't know if Yahweh is going to make it possible for those who remain to exist in elevated dimensions, to perceive the dimensions that already exist that we just have no way of understanding. So there are lots of things that Yah can do in a six-dimensional universe, with humans being a three-dimensional construct stuck in the fourth dimension of time, that would enable him to come back in far greater power. And since we don't really understand dimensions beyond three, I'm not in a position where I can tell you how that's going to happen. I can just tell you that understanding dimensions, that it's possible. But that's not what's really important here. What's important here is it's the glorious presence, the manifestation of power, the splendor and the status, the actual persona, the kavod of Yahweh, shall be revealed, becoming openly known. Kala. Exposed, disclosed, and recognized. And then the good news will be that every living creature will see him all together at the same time. Now, that's not possible with a physical manifestation. All together at the same time. All right, fellas, I'm open to constructive criticism here. I worked very hard to make certain that this was translated accurately, because this is true and reliable, because the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. What do you make of these words? Is there any word here that is difficult to translate?
In 46?
In 45.
In 45?
In the glorious presence, the kabod, that's a pretty common term. Manifestation of power.
Yeah.
Actual persona, kabod.
Mm-hmm.
Yod hey wah hey, that's, that one's not tough.
Simple. That's easy.
Yeah. Galah is not
common.
It's not, that's not all that common, but it means to expose, to disclose, to recognize, to reveal, to become openly known. I'm open to suggestions if it means anything else, but
well,
it means all of those things for sure.
Pretty clear on that one.
Yeah.
So, no,
yeah. Bashar is actually a tricky term, because the primary definition of Bashar is not flesh. It's not living creatures. The primary definition of Bashar is good news, to convey or announce a glad, happy, favorable report. That's the primary definition. The secondary definition is living creatures. So it's then the good news that is being announced is that all together, and or you can read it as then all flesh, but it's really not, there is, take your pick. I think in this particular case, you know, the context determines whether or not Bashar is good news, a favorable report, or Bashar is a living creature, a flesh. In this particular case, I can't see any context that would cause you to choose one over the other. I think that both have to be included.
Both seem equally applicable.
Yeah, and it doesn't change the meaning if you choose one or the other. Yada is a very simple term. It appears over and over again in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It speaks of being unified with Yah, in one accord with Yah. Simply translated, exactly at the same moment, all at the same time. Ki is as common as almost any word in the Hebrew lexicon. This is true, this is reliable, indeed, surely, emphasizing this point. Pay is the mouth, and we have to be careful when we apply human characteristics to Yahweh. Pay is it's the name of the letter, but it does mean mouth. But it means that's the source of spoken words. You know, it's really interesting in human design. Man is an animal, but a very unique animal. We're the only animal that has the capacity for language. You know, there's whales sing a song and dolphins have this little chirp, but the ability with the vocal cords that we have and mouth and tongue and the resonance and the like, for us to form both vowels and consonants is unique among all animals. We are the only animal that can convey complex thoughts orally. We're the only animal with opposable thumbs, which means we're the only animal that can write these complex thoughts. We're the only upright animal where we walk upright as Yah wants us to be, standing up. It means that our hands are now free to do work. We're the only animal that our young are dependent upon us for 18 years or more. Well, some animals, it's instantaneous, they go off.
Yeah. Some larvae
are in us to form bonds between men and women so that there are various roles that are required for that long a period of time. We're the only animal that builds complex shelters and homes. So we were designed to reflect exactly what Yahweh was trying to convey, what he seeks, what he wants. The prime purpose of creation is stamped on our very design.
Have a problem.
Yes, and then, of course, the Nesama.
Got a whole other way of thinking, yeah.
Yep, that of all animals, we're the only one with the Nesama, conscience, in addition to consciousness. But I'm not finding that you guys challenging much in Yashayah 45. And if you can't challenge Yashayah 45, you got no room for a Jesus Christ or a second coming of Jesus Christ.
You know, that's the theme through this whole thing, you know, 40. If you're thinking in terms of who are these people that write these things, which is in my last couple of days, I'm going, what do they do with 40? What can you do? I mean, it tells you exactly. You cannot get Jesus and the church out of that, or anything in 40.
Nor can you make this the prophecy that Yahweh Kahn cited applicable to the arrival of Jesus Christ in 33 CE. Because this didn't happen. Doesn't speak of his return, and it does not speak of what occurred in 33 CE. That's stunning. Oh, well, speaking of cognitive dissonance, Christian pastors have a troubling propensity to remove Yashayah 48 from the context of this prophecy, citing it after quoting verses of Paul's letters. They do so to imply that the false prophet's verbal diarrhea should be considered the word of God, which will endure forever, when it's obviously contradictory and adversarial to everything Yahweh conveyed to us. But beyond showing their inability to think, little do Christians know that Yahweh answered Yashayah's question on what to kara, what to read and recite, by sharing an allegory Dode had comprised 300 years earlier, and what may be his most inspiring Mizmor song, the 103rd. Just as Yosha would quote from Dode's 22nd Psalm to explain what he was doing on Pesach Passover, at the single most important moment of his entire life, Yahweh shared his son's Mashal word pictures with us in the heart of this prophecy to reveal who he'd be working with on this day. God is the greatest communicator mankind has or will ever witness, and his favorite writer was the author of this allegory. For those who have come to appreciate Yahweh's style, which is to weave threads into the tapestry of his word, which we can pursue to the point of understanding, this confirms that Dode was telling us the truth about the extraordinarily important and mutually dependent nature of his relationship with Yah. Yahweh himself and his diminished manifestation, Yosha, both quoted Dode.
That's amazing, isn't it? I love that.
So, let me tell you why I jumped ahead. I'm going to read Yashayah 6, 7, and 8 all together. A voice urges, Kalamar, read and recite, choosing to call out and welcome, Kara. So I asked, this is Yashayah speaking, what should I read and recite? This is the answer. Every animal, all flesh, and even their most cherished herald, all living creatures, every inhabitant of the earth, including everything they consider to be good news, is an abode akin to grass. Jesir dwells like hay. And the entire benefit is like the flowery nature of an engraved plaque on a shining memorial. Tritz an ornamental trophy which blossoms with a beautifully written inscription or dedication memorializing some achievement of the field in the open and broad way. Sade. The abode, likened to grass, chetsir, the dwelling comprised of dried and brown hay, withers. The flowery aspect of the engraved plaque on a shining memorial with its written inscription loses its vitality and fades because it is disdained as foolish. When the Spirit of Yahweh blows away the forgettable and the forgotten. Insightfully and unexpectedly, the people are an abode akin to grass. The abode of grass withers and shrivels up. The flowery written inscriptions on a memorial plaque at gravesites, they are disdained as foolish as they fade away. But the word of our God stands forever. If you care to look, and we will in a moment, Dodd composed this mashal, this word picture, and scribed it in the 103rd Mizmor song, 3 centuries before Yahweh shared it with Yeshaya. And he told Yeshaya what to cite. It was a psalm of Dodd. And yet nary a person has made the connection between this prophecy and the author of this remarkable allegory. And all of that is in spite of the fact that in the 5th Mizmor, Dodd announced his role in this prophetic portrayal regarding Yahweh's return. Now, that's disappointing because its literary genius has Dodd's fingerprints all over it. Now, for example, the word for grass, you know, that it's just typically just rendered grass in English Bibles, well, it's chetsir. It's an abode or a dwelling. And thus was used to paint a verbal portrait of the bodies in which our souls reside. And should you have missed the connection, both Dodd and Yahweh affirm it by directly associating people with this dwelling, which is akin to dried out hay and that's deprived of water, a point made brilliantly in the 103rd Mizmor. God's not talking about grass. He's talking about our bodies. Our bodies wither and decay. They aren't around forever. And so if you want to exist forever, you'd better pay attention to the eternal nature of Yah's word. That's the message. It has nothing to do with a lawn in California when they turn off your sprinklers. Further. While kiss can be rendered flower, it is far more accurately translated as a written inscription on a shining memorial plaque like those found at a gravesite, or as an engraved trophy memorializing some prior accomplishment. Now this becomes especially relevant when we realize that the verb nabel denotes something which loses its sheen and wears out, degrading and decaying, because it is disdained as foolish and seen as stupid, senseless, and contemptible. Now, these are all concepts God would rightly attribute to man's memorial plaques and his trophies, but not to flowers. Expecting us to be able to read what the words actually say and thus render them correctly is why the nature of the chatsir was explained, but not the trits. Yahweh and his son Dodd clearly see us as more capable than we're prone to act, or at least superior to our current translations or thinking. Religion has dumbed us down, and politics. those original choice of words is telling. Because we humans are wont to remember those who have passed away, honoring their lives by engraving our sentiments and their names on gravesite memorial plaques. But man's wishes and remembrances will not only fade away and be forgotten upon the arrival of the Spirit, such religious and patriotic platitudes will be seen as foolish and contemptible, exactly as any one of us that is part of the covenant would respond in a to a mortuary, to a funeral, and to a sermon at a funeral. We're just going to say, oh my God, none of this is true. Ah, get me out of here. What are you saying? You know, and the statements engraved in the stone of graveside plaques that have gone on to be with the Lord. No. Also, as an interesting aside, the best known memorial with the most flowery and beautiful inscriptions, the World Holocaust Remembrance Center, is that which commemorates and seeks to remember the mass murders associated with man's greatest act of inhumanity. An ode to Dode's people's worst experience. Isn't it interesting, though, how even if you didn't make the connection to 103rd Mizmor, which is would be a shame, how much more profound this statement is when we define the words correctly. By taking us directly to Zion in the heart of Jerusalem, we ought to be reminded of who lived there with Yahweh and what he had to say about establishing a father-son relationship with God. We should be motivated to consider what happened there and what it means to us. It is material to know where God is returning and to whom. We should ponder who he is bringing along with him as well. But most do not, because Yahweh's prophetic testimony through Yeshayah undermines their belief that the Lord Jesus Christ is their Savior and that he is returning for his church as part of his second coming, none of which is accurate. Upon the elevated and exalted mountain, ascend. Zion, the signs posted along the way, proclaims the good news for you to approach. Powerfully and with authority, choose to raise up your voice, bringing the good news to Jerusalem. Lift up on high and choose to proclaim, fear not, no longer feel intimidated, anxious, or apprehensive, cities of Yehuda. Behold, look up now and see your God. Yeshayah 49. It's quite a statement following the one we just read about abodes of grass and memorial plaques and the arrival of the Spirit. And that compared to the Word of God enduring forever. I know, Kirk, you told me that before the show began that you found a lot of things that were interesting in Yeshayah 49.
Yeah, 49 and 10. Probably the most interesting was that the English translations are laid out on most sources like that. Where if you look up the words, they say exactly that, and if you are so close to it, it's like you're not jumping around or hiding behind something. If you're going to bring the news to Jerusalem, people hate Jerusalem. People hate Yehudim in our world. Who do they think this is about? Was the overriding question to me all the time. Where is the Jesus in all this? And I said that a minute ago, but it's like, I really, really, really don't see how somebody can translate this. You know, you're always asking me, well, maybe we should argue more and stuff, and I'm trying real hard.
Yes.
It's not, and I know JB does the same thing. It's, I'm not trying to be pat you on the back. I mean, you deserve it, but I ain't trying to do it. It's just I don't get anything. I don't have all the resources you have, but even old country boy like me, I can do this stuff, and it's just not, it's not that unclear. It's not about Christianity. It's not about the world. He ain't coming anywhere else. Everything is about Jerusalem. Everything is about, that's his favorite place, is Mount, is about Mount Zion, signpost along the way. And on the next one, we're going to find out is the, who the Zoroah is.
Yes.
Which all ties into the same as well. So I keep going, we're talking about Yehuda, we're talking about Jerusalem, we're talking about Israel. This is his favorite stuff. What do you not get?
Yeah, he's not saying that don't be feel intimidated, anxious, or apprehensive, cities of
America.
The United States, or of England, or of Spain, or of France, or of Germany, or of Russia, or of China, or of Arabia. No.
That's the bastion of all those religions.
His promises have always been to Yehuda and Israel. Always. And the reason he said here, look up now and see your God to Yehuda, is because that's where he's returning.
Yes.
And, you know, all those would say, well, I'm not against Jews, I'm against Zionists. Well, then you're against Yahweh. And he just happens to be God. Because it's upon the elevated and exalted mountain, Zion, that the good news is going to be proclaimed. The only way that you can approach God is through the signs posted along the way of Zion. And from Yahweh's perspective, there's only two homes there. One's Dode, his is the other.
I don't know about you. I don't want to be opposed to either one of those.
No.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Kirk was saying. Yeah, it makes for better radio if we disagree and argue, but it's kind of hard to play devil's advocate when God is so clear with his message.
Yeah, I mean, you have to
it's one thing to play devil's advocate with a fellow like me that's prone to make mistakes. It's another thing to play devil's advocate against God.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yahweh's message is so clear. It's hard to sit here and argue and be like, oh, well, what about this? Well, what about what says is pretty straightforward. You know, and there's a difference. I'll try and call you out on it, but by and large, Yahweh's word is pretty clear. It's hard to sit here and come up with reasons to argue or, you know, contradict.
Yeah, and this was speaking to Yehuda on Zion. Behold, look up now and see your God?
Yeah. And he told you who he
is. If it was supposed to be Americana as this land of promise, make America great again, it wouldn't be speaking of Yehuda. If it was...
It'd be Boyum.
Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church or Christianity, it'd be the Vatican. If it was Islam, it'd be Mecca. Sorry. It's just not. This is a last day prophecy. Year 6000 Yah, October 2nd, 2033, at sundown. It's still Zion and Yehuda. And it says, your God. Uh-oh, Christians. Yahweh's focus has always been upon Zion, Jerusalem, and Yehuda, right up to and including the moment of his return. There is no hint of, indeed no room for, a church in Rome, a cathedral in Washington, London, or Paris, nor a mosque in Mecca. God is returning to and for his people. Yehuda in Jerusalem, period. End of conversation. If you're one of these, I just cringe to think of this. I think his name was John Ernst. The neo-Nazi anti-Semite who killed the Jewish woman, elderly Jewish woman at a synagogue, shot a little girl, and then before doing so put his whole anti-Semitic conspiracy manifesto online while claiming to be doing this for Jesus and for Christianity, and quoted all of his Christian New Testament. It'd be impossible for you to be any more errant, any more misguided than you are. You're a murderous, low-life scum. All of you, everyone who wishes to promote anti-Israel, anti-Yehuda conspiracies. It's despicable. It's an abomination to God. If you had any sense, you'd be ashamed of yourself. And it is far and away the number one conspiracy, has been throughout time. And the reason it's the number one conspiracy, because it's the conspiracy of Hasatan. It's just surprising as to how many morons he has got to go along with it. You know, there's a person I'm sure that's still listening on the phone tonight. One of my very, very favorite people. She knows, she has testimony inside and out and in between. And at one time in her life, she was into conspiracies. There were some things that happened in her life that made one conspiracy in particular appealing, and from there she found herself surrounded by other people, yeah, who supported conspiracies. And when I went and spoke out against them so voraciously, particularly when we translated the passages in Yeshayah, where Yahweh says, don't uphold these, don't embrace them, don't announce them, don't support these conspiracies. And use pejorative terms, saying that they're idiotic. And I devoted four or five shows, almost 2 hours apiece, to systematically refuting the top 15 conspiracies. And I said, listen, going through these, they're so easy to disprove that you're just an unthinking idiot to promote them. You're as foolish as those who are religious. You've rendered yourself incapable of thinking. And she was mad at me. She wrote me, how dare you say that? You know, I've always been, and by the way, she really is a very thoughtful person. She's a brilliant thinker, great mind. But she was offended that I called those who believed in conspiracies morons. Now, today, she would say, yeah, what was I thinking? How in the world did I get trapped in that world? God, that was stupid. And, you know, I'm bringing this up because I know that to use these pejorative statements is shocking to people's sensibilities. But they're the same words that Yahweh uses to describe those lost in the myth of conspiracy and religion and politics. God's blunt. Yahushua was blunt. Toad is really blunt.
Toad certainly was.
Yes. And so we ought not be uncomfortable with blunt, black and white, clear communication, even when it is pejorative. And Yahweh's prophecy throughout Yeshayah is this way. And if we're going to communicate what he said, we ought to use the same kind of concepts. And, you know, you may end up offending someone in the right way. It happened with this individual that I'm speaking of. And those that are so lost in the world of conspiracy and of religion and politics, they didn't have any hope anyway. Those things are self-reinforcing. They like-minded people hang around like-minded people. They spend all of their time reinforcing their beliefs by listening to videos of like-minded idiots.
If they're really truly thoughtful, they're going to challenge you on it, and if they're intellectually honest, they will eventually come to recognize they're wrong. So, as you said, friendly young can be the best thing.
And by the way, it's a good thing to recognize
you're
wrong.
They're going to come to the truth.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I can tell you that that there are conspiracies that I believed. Man, I've done legitimate research, reading the most ancient analysis, the oldest analysis of the beginnings of what are considered the most prevailing conspiracy today. I spent a year doing it. And I was a Christian. I was very political. So I know what it's like to be wrong. And one of the advantages of being wrong is that you gain a perspective that you would otherwise never have. There's actually an advantage of being wrong. And I'm glad that I was wrong as a Christian. I'm glad that I was wrong being political. I'm glad that I was wrong being conspiratorial. And I say, why in the world? Well, for the same reason that we ought to be glad that Moshe was wrong being in the family of Pharaoh, being part of his armed forces, being part of his economic system, being part of his religion. He knew it.
Gives you a perspective.
He knew what he was up against when Yah asked him to go with him. We ought to be glad that Abraham came out of Ur and of the Chaldeans and therefore Babylon and understood what he left. You know, it's important that we have people who have been there. Otherwise, how do you reach out to and explain to Christians when Yeshayah is all about condemning their religion, that the book they lug around with them they think is part of the inerrant word of God and, you know, and supports their religion, destroys it unless you know what the religion is all about. You know, I had to spend 5 years coming to understand what Muhammad said and did before I could really effectively speak out against Islam. And so there is an advantage, even though in Islam I was never wrong in the sense I was a Muslim, but I was a Christian. And so writing, questioning Paul and speaking of translating Yeshayah, it's a big help, just like it was such a big help that Yahweh went to a broken down 80-year-old shepherd to call his people out of Mitzrayim because he knew it.
You know, it's the old statement, you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your successes.
Absolutely. And our everything that Yahweh says is about changing our perspective, which means that we've all had the wrong perspective at one point in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a wrong perspective and have to change your perspective, it means that you've been wrong. And to admit that we were wrong and correct it is a very healthy thing. And one of the things that I get time and time again by readers of these 19 books is that your ability to admit that you're wrong goes a long way. It's just so different than everybody else that wants to be authoritative and say, oh, this is what it means and you know, it's this way or the highway. And you say, yeah, I've been wrong before. I could be wrong now.
I know when I first started reading through Yada Yawa, that was one of the things that, you know, really struck me was you would be addressing a point and you'd be like, you know, initially I thought this, but then this was brought to my attention and I realized I was wrong. So I changed and, you know, this is, you know, it's the scientific method. You know, you adopt a theory and you would stick to that theory until it can be proven wrong and then you create a new theory.
Correct.
And that was very much the method you were using. And, you know, even since then, I've seen you do that with, you know, time and time again, where it's like, okay, you know, everything I was talking about there, that was all wrong. Let me adjust and modify my view because I've gained new information.
Well, a great one here is recently.
Yeah,
I would.
Idiot speaks in absolutes.
Yes, I remember because one of my good buddies, Dode from Dodd Under, brought this to my attention that we've recently come to realize that Dode is the anointed Messiah, that he was anointed
mm-hmm.
three times. And one of the three times, by the way, he was anointed, was brought to my attention the other day. I was wrong in this. One of the first of the three times he was anointed, he wasn't anointed as king. He was anointed because the Spirit, he was actually anointed with the oil. It was the last of the judges, Shamuel, who did it. But as he did it in Dode's youth, the Spirit of Yahweh came upon him and never left him. So the direct correlation between the Spirit coming upon him and the physical act of him being anointed with oil at Yahweh's discretion, his choice. And you realize that we're told over and over again that Dode is the Mashiach, the Messiah. We are never once told that Yahushua is the Messiah. Never once. We find Dode's name and last day's prophecies scores of times, and Yahushua's never once. The kingdom during the millennial Shabbat celebration is Dode's, not Yahushua, specifically Dode's. Yahweh says, I'm coming back with the branch, and the branch is Dode. He says, I called Dode out to be my shepherd. He is the shepherd of my flock. And so I knew, having translated Daniel 9, that the only place that could have possibly referred to Yahushua as Messiah, Mashiach, was there. But to my surprise, it's not HaMashiach. And Mashiach isn't even used as a noun there, so it can't be a title. But instead as
an adjective.
Adjective. It modifies messenger. And so never is Yahushua named as the Mashiach. And I knew that, which is why, because Daniel 9 isn't extant in the that portion of it in the Dead Sea Scrolls, that I said, you know, I can't prove it, but since Mashiach isn't used as a title relative to Yahushua, that the thing that makes the most sense, if we want to give him a similar title, it would be Mashiach. And I found that Mashiach is used 22 times, never in reference to Yahusha, but the name Mashiach means the work of Yah. And therefore, it fit Yahusha, even if it wasn't a title. And so I began to call him the Mashiach Yahusha, because he was the work of Yah as the Passover lamb. I wasn't wrong in doing so, and I didn't say, you know, God gave him the title. I just said, I'm going to use this because it's found 22 times, and at least it's accurate. Or Mashiach is not accurate. But nonetheless, there's still the perception that because of the use of Mashiach, that Mashiach, I should say, that I was giving Yahushua that title, when in fact Dode's the one that is Mashiach. And so, to the extent that Mashiach, work of Yah, even though it's accurate, I still incorrectly use it as a title. One of these days I have to go back and correct. I got it wrong. There's another thing that I think I got wrong. I think there's a number of places where I speak of Yosha's soul after Pesach, going into Sheol to fulfill Matzah. And it's Yahweh's soul.
Mm-hmm. That's a biggie to me.
Yeah, it's Yahweh's soul.
I'm saying it's a bigger mistake. I mean, it's bigger to get that understanding. Mm-hmm. That makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the kind of mistake you need to go and say, I need to correct everything, just because the fact that when Yahweh gave his soul to Yahusha, you could say it's Yahweh's soul, it's Yahusha's soul. It's just far far more accurate to say the whole truth is it's Yahweh's soul on loan for a while there to Yosha, but it's Yahweh's soul. So there's lots of nuances of things that you continuously grow and learn. I had a person that just lives across the way from the channel from me. Interesting guy. He's an agnostic. Grew up in a very religious family, but became an agnostic. And he's a voracious reader. And so I gave him five or six of the books that I've written. And he was saying that, because I was talking about, since he's anti-religious, and how in the world could you be writing about God and translating the Torah if you're also anti-religious? And I explained that, and he said, but my love in life is learning. If I'm going to discard faith, which I already have discarded, and I'm going to come to know, then what fun would life be if there was nothing more to learn? I said, well,
there's always more to learn.
Here to tell you that I'm learning more now than I did 20 years ago when I began this project. So it's the more you know, the more interesting things are to study, and the more you come to understand, and that life's constantly growing in that regard. Marvelous. So I really like that.
I've come to learn much more coming to know Yahweh than I ever did as an agnostic.
Yeah. And it gives you a perspective. It's this transition from knowing to understanding. Being grounded with a proper perspective is tremendously empowering in that regard. So, yeah, I learn more every day than I ever thought possible previously. Always learning.
Well, the last 3 months have been like a wow.
Yeah, it really has been. It's been an acceleration.
Shall we table 410? Because 410 is a biggie.
Yeah, let's table it. We'll begin it. We'll recap 4.9 and then go to 4.10. I almost feel like I did an injustice to 4, 6, 7, and 8. And maybe the injustice is okay because we will end up translating Ms. Moore 103, where the whole concept is developed. And I just think it's brilliant, the terms that Dode chose to use and how much more insightful they are than flowers and grass.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
All right, gentlemen. You have a wonderful week. Happy Shabbat to one and all. And we'll be with you again this time next week. And I must have been really boring tonight because Asher, my 7-month-old Labrador, is absolutely sound asleep at my feet. So for all of you who had to endure this as Asher did, I apologize.
Okay.
Words to put you to sleep by. All right. Happy Shabbat, everyone.
Happy
Good
Shabbat.
Night. Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.